the obstructions of daylighting and how it's affecting the exterior and the interior of the building. Exterior meaning how much sun is getting through the windows, how much is getting to the solar panels, and to the solar collector. Interior, how much is getting to the thermal mass wall in seasons, winter and summer. And I use a lot of computer simulations with Ecotect to get a better idea throughout the year, because this is such a short class, I could only do the times that we were, it was winter and pretty hazy out, so I couldn't get a good idea of the sun levels throughout the year. But I started with looking at the existing conditions in the tree line in the back, the south of the building, and after talking with Cliff, he was pretty concerned with the amount of trees and the density of the trees. And as you can see, it's more than half or almost all evergreen. So throughout the year, it's thick evergreen. This line of trees pretty much stays the same. Obviously, you can see it fall. There's some trees that have lost their leaves, so you get a little bit more daylight through, but it's not enough to substantially be effective with the systems. The next was the solar rock collector, the heat collector, and how the sun is getting to that, where the most sun is throughout the year, and hopefully suggest solutions to have better gains. The other thing was the shades. I wanted to come up with better solutions of how to accurately shade the sun in the summer months for glare and keep the heat in, as opposed to just drawing shades up and down. There's kind of other solutions we can use. The other interior aspect was the clear story. Right now they have shutters on them that they lower to keep the heat in. Both these solutions, what they do is they do keep the heat in, not very well. The insulation doesn't work effectively. It's not even insulation. It's just like a baffling that just keeps air and heat from kind of going out, but it doesn't do much. What they both do is they block the sunlight from coming in the winter months. So you're forced to use the electric in your lighting. So they are keeping heat in somewhat, not efficiently, but they're also keeping daylight out, so you have to use other systems. I started with interviewing Cliff and his concerns, because from going around the site, you get an idea of what's wrong, but he is the occupant, he's there all the time. I want to know what his concerns are, what his focuses are, and what he's seen throughout the season. And most of his concerns were the assembly room is too cold, and the daylighting issues. Substantial heat loss, like I said before. I know they did testing, low door testing, to see where and how much is being lost, and it's pretty substantial. The solar collectors, like I said, are not receiving enough daylight throughout the year. The thermal mass is not getting enough light in the trees. So what I did for the analysis is start to measure out these trees, the distance, so I can get an idea and plot this line of blockage from the sun, because I really want to see, as the sun goes through its yearly cycle, how much sun and where the sun is being blocked the most. And what I did is I started about 22 feet from the edge of the building, a reference point, and just measured out every tree, the distance, and with the clinometer, measured the angle so I could get the average height of the trees. Because the slope goes up on the site, I just measured the plane here and projected it. It's not accurate where they come down, but I wasn't really concerned with that. I was concerned with where that line is.
Before you move on, can you explain it? There's some smaller writing. Some of it I can read, some of it.
These are just the information where, the distance from the point and then the angle of the top of the tree. Yeah, this is just my, when I was in the field.
Okay.
But this is a chart showing the trees that I measured 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, just for a reference point. And then these trees on the end were kind of hard to measure because they're right next to the building, and the angle is like 20.
It's making the presentation right away. You probably should say, maybe for some it might not be obvious, that this is a 360 degree.
That's what I was going to get to.
Okay.
The other thing that's important, like you just mentioned, was that this is a panoramic view of the back, so it's not just standing out. And I emphasize that in the testing. When I did the sunlight testing, you had to take into account overlaying this over the sunpath diagram. The sunpath diagram, next, is a round representation of the sun's path throughout the year. These points here, I measured with a compass and plotted them at the angle from where I was standing so I can get an idea of where exactly those trees were hitting. And to map that over the panoramic, I use it's called a Waldrum. It corrects the cylindrical projection of the panoramic image so you can get an idea of where the actual shading is. This chart shows the sun's path, winter, the summer. So you can see in the winter, throughout the course of the day, from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., it's pretty much being blocked. There's no light coming into the south side of the moon whatsoever. You get a little bit more of it as the month goes on in the summer, but even at noon, when the sun is at its highest angle, from June to January, you're still getting some sun, but as you can see, this is noon, the highest angle in January, and it's being blocked throughout the entire day. There's very little sun in this area, a little bit, but not much. So
you're shading, I'm sorry, is that shading?
This one?
What you're showing out in the three diagrams.
Of yeah, these, I'm sorry. These are the representation of the tree mass. I took the images and the heights and in three dimension plotted them in the locations where they were to get an idea of that mass of the tree. In the report, it mentioned that this is the worst case scenario. It takes into account a solid mass, not the trees when they lose their leaves. So this, as they do testing, they do the worst case scenario. So everything below that is better. But this diagram here, you can see this is the visual diagram of the shading path from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. You can see the only amount of sun you're getting is in the lawn. The building, for the most part, is being completely shaded, and in front of it is obviously massively shaded. And at 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. in January, the entire south facade is completely dark. These diagrams here show, again, this is the tree mass, the sun angles and where they're coming in, and how much of those trees are clipping in. And most of the sun that's being blocked is on that south facade of the assembly room and the solar collector, where most of the available light is for the windows. The clear storage do provide some window, but it's such a little amount that it's not effectively lighting the space or getting to the thermal wall. Like I just said, the solar collectors are pretty much in shade about 80% of the time. This diagram goes over, in conjunction with Ryan's group, one of Cliff's concerns were the solar collector and the inefficiencies of them. Currently, I'm not exactly sure what, it's a metal oxide frame that it uses. I'm not sure the actual material, and Cliff wasn't sure either, but he has a cap sheet, which I list later.
You're talking about the selective surface?
The selective surface is
metal?
It's a black metal frame with the solar collectors inside of it. And the selective surface absorbs more heat, so it attracts more sunlight, so more heat goes through the solar collectors. But it's disconnected. The material is not as efficient as it once was. There's newer technologies out there that are more effective and that you could use less panels. So my intention was to study along this array where the most sunlight is coming in and where to suggest to Cliff or the next group the best location to put new panels for a new solar collector. in this diagram, you can see the total sunlight for the whole year. And I can't really read the values, but this is hours, average hours. What it did is that you can do either max or cumulative values or average hours. This is 5 to 0. So you can see the average amount of hours in this corner is where you're getting the most sunlight over the course of the year, plus or minus 5 hours. It's not exactly accurate. It just it takes in the sky luminance factor. It kind of gives you the worst case scenario. It's a ballpark, not exact. This diagram shows the percent of direct sunlight that's actually hitting the panel. The percent goes from 90 to 0. So the direct sunlight. So the amount of direct sunlight that's hitting it is. Most of it is hitting at this area here. You can see it fades off a little bit. But what I really want to see is if the worst case is the winter. How is that performing in the winter months? This is a chart from 90 to 0.
What month?
Oh, I'm sorry, it's 35. This is 35 at 90.
This is for the entire year.
This is the entire year. This is just for the winter. So you can see there's...
January 21st, or December 21st, what is
your date? I'm sorry, January and December. Between the months, 90 to 6 p.m. of January and December for the winter months.
So it's doing several samples over time.
In the report, it explains everything, but it takes an hourly value, and then divides it by the number of days that you have selected. So by the 365, it would take an hourly value divided by the days. This takes the months from, you can select the little drive bar, you can select the times you want to sample. What I just did, the most amount of daylight, the sunrise, the sunset.
Okay, this wasn't Ecotech, this was the Waldrum?
No, this is Ecotech, but that specific chart was a Waldrum.
How was it spelled? I'm not familiar with Waldrum.
Yep.
And what is the Waldrum? Is it the software?
No, that's just the guy that made the projection for that.
Oh.
For that map. Whoever scientist created it.
For the three-dimensional.
Yeah. So you can see that in the winter months, most of the sun that you're getting is in this area. And it's primarily because of the tree mass that's over here of all evergreens is blocking a lot of the sun. It opens up a little bit on this side, so you're getting a little bit of light coming at that, but early in the morning it's completely blocked.
Excuse me.
Most,
the top two months,
that's 365 days, the whole year.
Oh, the whole year?
Yep. I could have done equinox the summer, the winter. So I wanted to see over the course of the year, through every condition, where the sun is hitting the most. And then in the winter, which is our worst kind of sun availability, where the most sun is in that panel. And because of that tree mass, most of it is in the north, left corner.
So you could add some more labels to that.
Yeah.
It's just a bit clearer.
The tricky there.
And for the final report, you might want to have some individuals like that. Are those loaded already, maybe on Blackboard?
Individuals.
Or individual lines for that sort
of thing. Oh, yeah. I could. Okay. It's not loaded. Yeah.
Okay. And if, do you need to have Ecotech, or do you need to have AutoCAD to be able to do those?
No.
Okay.
They're just exported images.
All right. Okay.
From this, I shifted to the interior, and I wanted to see, for the thermal mass, the sun rays and how they're getting in. I know the previous group had done some studies of the angle of sun and where it's coming in. And they suggested putting some sunlight in here and blocking this off for some solar gains, and basically treating that as a heat collector, disperse heat throughout the space. I kind of went a different way. I kind of went more of an application route to... How can we apply louvers to direct the sunlight back in without creating more volumes in the rooms and other solutions. So how do we, if we trim the trees, if we can't do anything with the trees, if we leave the trees, how do we get that sunlight in there as opposed to going and clearing the forest? How can we take the sunlight that's coming and redirect it in further than space? You can see that in September, the sun rays are coming straight down, and you're getting very little sunlight, but a lot of glare, which would be right here. In January, you're getting the angle of the sun that you need, but you're not getting it because the trees are blocking that those sun rays. So ideally, this is what you would want in the winter months, but you're not getting it because of the trees. Explain this diagram here. This does a color chart of natural daylight only. So it takes the sky factor, it takes into account the lux value, which is 6,000. When I was doing light level testing, and it was an overcast day, the light levels were about 3,000 lux. 6,000 is a like I said before, an average worst-case scenario.
And 6,000 lux is about 600 foot candles.
Foot candles.
Okay, it's approximately 10 difference. And again, you might want to add daylight levels. When is this patient? Mark it on there.
Oh, no, this isn't a specific time. This graph doesn't do it for a specific time. It does it for the whole, it takes into account the sky factor.
The whole year?
Which is the whole year.
Okay.
So
okay.
It doesn't specifically, this is the report. I'm going to put the PowerPoint bullet points so it's a lot easier to understand. But what this diagram shows is that very little daylighting is being projected back into that rock wall, the thermal mass wall. There's a lot coming into the middle of the space, and then it pretty much just dies off.
One thing that's important to know is that if the mass is not in, if the sunlight's not hitting the mass, it's not going to be very effective. It's very important that it hits the mass.
And in the winter is when they want the heat gain from that thermal mass wall. So if no sun is getting to the thermal mass wall, there's no heat being dispersed from it.
There was a time when it was fairly comfortable. They installed the furnace not that long ago. I don't know how many years it is now. Maybe 7.
And
time goes quickly.
I talked to Cliff, and he wasn't sure if that was because of the sunlight getting in or if the rock wall just wasn't.
I think it was a combination of not getting it, but also the fact that it's not occupied 24 hours a day, whereas if this was a house and people were living here, they could put shades up and take shades down and open the vents of the rock as needed, whereas people would come in and everything was all closed up and it would be cold, and that then they would open things up. You know what I'm saying? Shades. I think it's harder.
Potentially coming. And the next portion, which I didn't really get into as much as I wanted to because I ran out of time with the recommendations, because there are endless solutions for daylighting. What I did is kind of, I'm going to suggest approaches to develop. If we do have to, or if we do have the ability to cut down trees, trim trees, some other way to reduce that line of obstruction, probably want to focus in on the heaviest mass of evergreen, which is where you're getting the most the obstruction. Like I said before, this side of the building was pretty much in shade. This, you were getting a little bit of sunlight because it opens up more in this area and it's heavily obstructed in that area. So if we did have the ability to trim or remove trees, that's probably where you would want to do it. The solar collector, I don't know if Ryan got into it, but I talked to Cliff about new technology. He's been working with a local manufacturer that does have new technologies, materials that are higher coefficient where you can use less panels. The heat gain is a lot more. And he mentioned one that was the titanium nitride oxide, and I did some research and found a couple spec sheets of it. There's really not that much information on it that I could find other than a spec sheet. That it's basically a painted selected material they put onto that frame. And the solar panels, the collectors themselves, there's five or six different options you can use that are more efficient.
Do you know what the word collective surface means?
The application of the painted material?
Yeah. Do you know what the purpose of having a collective surface is? Is that, anybody hear what it is? The selective surface?
Selective surface.
I know what it is, but you know.
Well, okay. There are certain coatings that will reflect light. Well, a lot of well, some coatings will reflect certain range of solar radiation, like in the infrared range. And then there are some types of coatings called thermochromic coatings that will reflect light or radiation, not just light within the visible range, but a certain level of radiation at a certain temperature, above a certain temperature, and then below that temperature, it will absorb light. So then, if you put that coating like on the roof, above, say, if the temperature is 30, the threshold temperature, above 30, it would reflect, and below 30, it would absorb heat.
Basically, do you want to add to that, or there is more?
What I'm familiar with is there's certain coatings, like you mentioned a titanium nickel oxide or titanium something oxide, but like nickel oxides and certain types of coatings. A typical, just normal surface, the absorptivity and emissivity are usually somewhat the same. The selective coating, a lot of times what you're looking for is something that has a high absorptivity, so it will accept a lot of light, but it will have a low emissivity, which means it will not radiate the heat off as quickly. So you're collecting more of the heat without letting it go. Yes.
And the beauty of that is, one way that you want to protect is that they used to use two panes of glass or some kind of glazing. Okay, but with the selective surface, you can do one pane of glazing, because you're not having as much heat radiated out, and so you don't need that insulation of the airspace, you know, between the two facings. So, and I wasn't aware of what you had talked about, Cheryl. I think that's interesting on the different temperatures, the temperature dependence. I didn't realize that. That's good to know.
Yeah, I looked at some thermochromatic paints, not what she had said, but basically, some that had pigments, they use them more for, you know, like industrial applications to see if something's overheating. So once that paint reaches a certain temperature, one pigment breaks down and changes the color. The one pigment essentially becomes clear.
Yeah.
So you see the pigment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the same technology then that's applied to the glass that you can put a current through and
this isn't dependent on electricity. This is just a thermal at a certain temperature. Basically, you know, these little micro pigments kind of dissolve inside themselves.
I wonder if you could use that technology to do the same thing.
Problem is they're UV sensitive. UV breaks them down fairly quickly.
Okay, and we're getting high in UV, as you know, with the breakdown of the ozone layer. More than we used
to. Great. Yeah, so I didn't really get into the materials that much, but what I was concerned with is if we do develop or experiment with new technologies and different panels, where would be the best location to put them? If we're going to put them in an area that's shaded, just as inefficient as the ones that are there now. The next part of my recommendations was the sun directing with the sun rays, and these are millions of systems that you can use. A lot of these, this chart breaks down the best case scenario of if you're going to lose translucency, if you're going to lose views outside, if you're going to have some sort of application or if it's just a glass system. There's everything from light shelves that are applied to the exterior that direct light into the building and reduce the glare. There are systems that can be applied that will track the sun and maintain a level, a desired level of lumens or lux in the space. So if you wanted 300 lux, 600 lux in the space, you could have the shelf programmed to track the sun and reflect the amount of light that's needed. Those are more window applications of louver systems. There are technologies of prismatic glass that's the laser cut glass that reflects the light. A lot of those, you lose a lot of visual. They're kind of not transparent. So you could combine those with my panels. I know the lower panel windows in the assembly room could be converted to a prismatic glass. I'm not really sure. Say something.
Where is this table taken from?
It's a book called Building Daylighting.
The diagrams from there too?
Yep.
State your source or it's plagiarism.
Yep.
Okay. But I mean, have it on the sheet. Yeah. You could put I'd put the whole thing. For that. In some cases, you can just put the last name of the person, the author, and then the page number if it's a book, and then in the back you have your sources. But here I think I will put it all.
Okay. So to sum up, most of what I was doing was investigating the site conditions, what were there, how it's affecting the daylighting and the systems that are applied to the building, and analyzing how it's being obstructed, the inefficiencies, and then the recommendations of what could possibly be done. So.
Very nice. Does anyone have comments? I have some comments, so I'll let you go first this time.
I thought it was really great. It documents your ring to a much more high-tech level.
I found some frustrations because there's a lot that I know I want to do, but I really just don't have it. You really have to get really detailed with everything. I wish I had a list to do it.
Do you have recommendations that you can make to anyone following up on this? This goes for all of you. Make recommendations to the next group.
That's going to kind of be, that's what I want to do. The recommendations is kind of where I ran out of time, but I'd like to suggest if the group next class were to develop sun lighting systems, the best applications, I think, for that. Because there's some that work for overcast sky, there's some that work better for high altitude areas.
And we're overcast.
And yeah, we're
overall, I thought it was very nicely done. And I love your ecotech and all of this. I think it was very creative and a great analysis of it. Let's see. When you have tables, I already said different sources. You may explain that fully what. I know you went over it briefly,
but
you might even divide it up to put larger.
I know, I had every intention of selecting
it. Okay. I mean, don't worry. I'm not trying to give you a hard time. I'm just trying to say things to help. You need to define your terms. Lux, foot candle, lumens, and maybe with a diagram. Maybe at the beginning or close to the beginning so people understand.
Conversions.
Yeah, what you're talking about. You might have to explain what a clinometer is.
Okay.
For example, it's good for all of you to explain your equipment and what information you're getting from it. To start out, as I think I mentioned this already, but someone might not realize when they first look at that first diagram on page 3, it's a 360-degree total. I mean, it looks kind of funny.
About 180.
Do you think people will get it?
It's about 180.
Or 180, whatever it happens to be. Point that out that this is pink, and I think that would be helpful. On the Oh, the shades on page 4?
Did
you look? Oh, yeah, wrong page. Oh, you're on page 7. Page 4? Yeah. These, I guess, I don't know if you noticed, they've been taken out, the shades, the shades that the architect, who told me this, that the architect...
The Babylon shades?
Yeah, those shades up there, they took out. They had Wayne Appleyard come out to the site. Troy, the new director, Wayne Appleyard out. And he was looking at it, and it's like, what are those doing up there? I designed those windows to bring light to that wall. And apparently, like, the next day, Troy went up and took all those down.
So they were taking down, but if they, one recommendation might be to still, add something like this, but make sure, and with insulation, and make sure that it holds all the way back so it's flush to the ceiling so that you don't, block any of the sun.
Cheryl? I think it's time that they really get some high-tech equipment in there to have some automatic, controls to cover that window automatically at night, because at night it's going to become a radiator.
Exactly.
They're going to be really cold in the winter.
Focus too is that this space is not always occupied. There's not always Cliff's not in there. No one else is going to be maintaining the levels. So systems that track the sun automatically, much like the solar collector, the photovoltaic panels do. New glass materials that have better coefficients of heat gain, heat loss. You wouldn't need any window treatment applications. It's more systems, I think, at that point.
And really, those are not so much for looking out, for viewing. It really could be just diffuse light maybe coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Using something like if you use Vanagel in them, which would be higher insulation level, but you still get, light to it.
Well, if they could, I don't know the applicability of the thermochromic coating, but if they can be applied to windows, then they would allow heating when it's cold and get over heat to
escape. But they're low emissivity coatings, which helps, but you're talking about something more extensive than that. I know that the thermoelectric ones are very, very expensive. I don't know how.
No, it's a coating, but it's expensive. But then for their size, if they're small. And then with all the incentives that are available right now, with the federal the 30% or whatever, and then there's the tax rebates.
A lot of these
might not apply for nonprofit.
I would think that they would really get the best deal.
I looked into the tax incentives, and a lot of those are going away now that it's becoming so prevalent that a lot of the tax incentives are being scrutinized a little bit more. They're not available as much as they used to be. They kicked off the tax incentives, so it started to fall rolling, but now that a lot of them are coming back on the tax incentives, but there are some.
I'm thinking that since they're a state energy center, they would be able to get more than what a business, commercial, or residence, because they're there to represent and show this is the state of the art. This is what you can do with energy efficiency and renewable.
Ideally, if you can do it without using energy, I've seen a diagram where people use, if you could think of two pop bottles and putting a refrigerant inside so that when the sun hits that refrigerant, it heats up and it becomes gas and flows over to the other one and causes it to turn. If you can have these louvers, if it's strong enough, to do that, maybe, and when it gets, the sun comes out, maybe it opens them, okay? And as this cools off and it goes back down, it would close up, that sort of thing, which would be something where you wouldn't have to, which shouldn't cost a lot of money to do, I guess, is what I'm saying. And it's really nice if you can do it in a passive way. Another thing, even today, people people don't want to always be opening and closing. And today when people are working both, you know, it's just like two income families or just that used to be before things got really bad. You know, people aren't at home to put up shades and put them down like they should. Also, I thought it was interesting on page 7, you were showing how the lawn gets a lot of the sun. And when, if you had vertical glazing rather than slanted glazing, we have snow. And the snow then could reflect up and you get more light coming from that. But having it at an angle like this, it's just going to graze off and they won't get it. So I don't know if any of you had thought about that. Somebody else is going to mention it.
Another thing that Cliff had mentioned in one of your photos, I believe it was one of your photos showed early on, you know, the slanted glazing, the snow collects on top of it.
Yeah, and it blocks it. Yeah.
So halfway up.
Yeah. Dredges and covers the entire.
Oh, it might make sense to, you know, pull that back.
Are these the photovoltaic panels that are here?
There are some there, and they're also further up. There are some right there.
These are a different type of heat collector, weren't they?
Well, no, those are PV, but those are just for like demonstration purposes in their kitchen area.
I wasn't sure. I know the report from the previous group had mentioned there were two types of solar collectors. These and then there was some other thing. Oh, I wasn't sure.
There's two more on the roof and then there's one outside.
Right.
And there's one on the roof that provides hot water.
That's a normal water system.
Yeah.
And as Buddy said, there's also a PV component to it.
There's the way that the heat, or Vicki, so are you going to cover, who's doing, are you going to cover how the system works?
Between the air and the rock storage.
Okay, so just saying, need a diagram of the solar collectors would definitely be, you know, put together with the other group. On page 9, enlarge the ranges so you can read them.
Yeah.
Okay. You might want to split that for the presentation. Split it into a few different pages. It's okay to start out with a bunch of them, showing some examples, and then show them larger to explain, and have your more labels fixed in your head.
One thing I noticed on this page is those top diagrams, you know, yellow is representing where we have more sun.
Yeah.
And the bottom, it's representing where we have less.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's a little...
That's the way it... You can do, the thing is they do different, it's not all the same values. They change percentage, then they go to hours. So, yeah, I need to probably better indicate the convenience.
Yeah.
Or maybe not put them on the same diagram, or the same page.
Yeah, I think it would be helpful not to have them on the same page and to point out that, you know, they do get different meanings.
I will say that the Ecotec software, it's smarter than you are. It's smart enough to know you have to have the right information to put into it before you get the right results. So a lot of what I was doing was I went out and tested the wet levels and doing a lot of field measuring just to make sure that my simulations were accurate. When I first started, I just put values in and just put values out. And it gave me a cool little color chart here, but the actual values were completely inaccurate. It was wet levels of 20 lux that were not represented what the site is at all. And the other thing that's important is picking the actual data file of the area is kind of helpful to get a better understanding. Because if you're just picking Detroit, it takes all of Detroit, or it takes the Detroit Airport, or it takes Northern Michigan. You want to be as close. I think they come within 13 miles of any area.
Oh, goodness. So this is another thing you want to really point out for.
Yeah. If you're going to be doing testing, yeah, you might want to say that. I indicate the data file that I'm using and where it is. So.
Could you write up something a little more like some of the things you said about Ecotec and how color choose, because you need to have AutoCAD to do PicoCAD, right?
No,
it's a
separate program, and it's free. Well, it's not free.
Free for students.
It's a student version. That's free.
It's
for students.
Yeah.
Does it work with the where you have the pictures of Google SketchUp? Did you have to convert that to AutoCAD? Or?
Nope, I just took a SketchUp model and I exported. The other thing too is EcoTech. You want to keep the geometry as primitive as possible because it calculates like a rendering. All the vertices and all the faces, it calculates all of that. So the simpler, the better, and you can get the same results. But I just exported the model as a 3DS format and brought it in. It can bring in EWG, 3DS, it can bring in anything.
3DS is 3D Studio, Maxis, older format.
It's another file format, like DWG. It's a solid.
Well, you don't need the software. It's just a common thing that a lot of, that 3D format, a lot of programs can write to, a lot of them can read.
It can handle PWG, though. You can import it.
I think that some people will be very interested in knowing the details on that. For presentations made to, say, at an ASHRAE conference, you couldn't mention name brands or things to think, but you could talk about software X. And these are the things that we ran into, so people have an idea of what they run into. But for our talks, our presentations for Upland Hills and for Lawrence Tech, you can go ahead and use the names. Okay. Is anybody getting cold? Are you comfortable with that?
The other thing, too, Ryan's group wants to look into it. You can actually just do a study on this, you know, whatever you want, little panel, but you can put in the exact material, download materials, it'll give you cut sheets of everything that material has to give you almost exact, accurate measurements.
In EcoSet?
Yeah, you can put the actual physical material. So if you went to a manufacturer and they have their data file, their spec sheets, I don't know, you know, drawing data files, there's an area in here that you can select those objects and do tests on the actual material and transmit and heat loss and gain and all that. But it's really
that doesn't sound like
there was
much way over here, yeah. Very nice job. Thank you. You did copy that in.
Yep.
Oh, by the way, I know you have final report, I'll fix that later. It'd be nice if it had your names on it or, you know, what the topic.
Show up in this view.
Am
I in the right folder?
Yeah, the one right here on the right.
Yeah.
Try clicking on it. Yeah, yours didn't copy, so we need to put it back.
It was great.